Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel feeding it!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
And he's looking old. The fuck, is he good?
Oh, fuck. Have you been by a mirror lately?
Oh. I guess that's... Are we recording here?
Yep.
I guess that's how we get to start the show.
Jeez.
One day, Rusty.
Don't throw rocks when you live in a glass house.
I guess. You know what? One day we're going to start recording because it takes us sometimes 10 or 15 minutes to shoot the breeze and get all the settings right. And I'm going to tell Stevie to start recording there. And people can come inside my painful world dealing with you. I said... Aaron Rodgers is looking old. Do you have mirrors in your house? Have you seen what you look like? Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. It's a weekly podcast we do with Russ Cortinel and myself. And we want to thank you for listening and tuning in. And oh, ho, ho, Merry Christmas. Rusty, it's that time of year. How are you doing?
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays. How are you?
I'm good. Yep. I wish you could introduce me like Joe Buck introduces Aikman. And Hall of Famer and my co-host, Hall of Famer.
Super Bowl champion.
Great looking guy.
Fuck, well, God, I'll just make the shit up.
My co-host, Russ Cortinel.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. No, I'll make it up one day. Yeah. Holds all the... Like Tom Brady this weekend, busting all the records. Russ Cortinel holds every NHL record there ever was. You know, that's why we got a podcast. How's the week been, Rusty? Your team won.
Good. Yeah, finally on Thursday.
Minnesota, they tried to lose.
Yeah, they tried to lose. The worst lead in the NFL is 29-0.
God, it was looking like that. Did you? By the way, speaking of football, before we get into some stuff that we want to talk about, one is the Olympics. Not sure if the players are going to go or not. We want to ask you about that, whether you choose to, whether the owners should let them go. That's always a hot topic. Mm-hmm. Rivalries, yep. I got questions from people. They want to know that. The Grey Cup, Rusty, was on this weekend.
I was just talking to Robert Boza in Vancouver about it.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers win the Grey Cup in overtime. It was exciting. You ever been to a Grey Cup?
Where was it at? No.
It was held in Hamilton, and Hamilton was the opposing team. And it was exciting, really good. There's always this debate up here, Russ, with the CFL for the you American guys. The CFL is three downs. It's the field is 110 yards long. The end zones are 20 yards deep. The field is twice as wide. And the CFL has been around for hundreds of years, but it doesn't do great all the time, Russ. Mm-hmm. You know. Economically, it's always a tough go. And one of the topics all the times is they should change the rules to the NFL rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. Yeah. Bring the make it a feeder league almost if you want.
Exactly.
To. But I'll tell you what, Rusty, there's purists in the league. They will not have it. I want three downs. Yeah. Don't touch my game.
Yeah.
Anyway, and they may have an argument there yesterday if you watch that game. But did you ever go to any Grey Cups?
No, I didn't.
You like to party? Grey Cup is right up.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, I couldn't go to Grey Cup because it was a plan. You know.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know you've got a good Grey Cup story you've told about the Ziploc bags of.
Oh yes.
Bringing rye into the
sneaking the booze in,
and the guys broke. But you got him in to your seat, and the guy stepped. Your friend stepped all over him and wrecked
every bag. He stepped on every fucking.
Oh God!
Bag.
I heard one the other day, not the Grey Cup, but I was playing golf with a Canadian, and he told a story about sneaking booze into the stadium.
Yeah,
and he filled up a 40-ouncer of an old coffee cup, like a percolator cup, the big silver thing.
Sure.
And he put mitts on, oven mitts, Yep. And he came running up with his tickets in his mouth and said, hot coffee coming through, hot coffee coming through. And they let him in. And yep. he had a 40-ouncer of rye in the coffee.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So there's one story, Grey Cup story I have. And then the other one, it was in Regina. My buddy leaves the game. And there's a lineup for cabs. And, you know, right. how the hell are you going to get out? It's 40 below zero. And he said there was a pizza joint across the street. So he walked in there and ordered a pizza. And he goes, what if I get you to deliver it? And the guy goes, but you're standing right here. He goes, but what if I get you to deliver it? He goes, well, we'll deliver it. There's a little charge. And he goes, okay, can I ride with him? And that's how he got home from the Grey Cup.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant.
So I'm sorry, I haven't been to a Grey Cup, but I mean, what a party and what a tradition for Canadians.
Well, they call it the national drunk. I've been to, I was telling Stevie, I hold the record for being to 20 plus Grey Cups.
Wow. That's incredible.
But here's the further part of the record, Russ. Here's what the record is. I've probably been to 25 Grey Cups because my birthday is a Grey Cup. My folks used to give me tickets, but I only attended two games.
Oh, no. You scalped the tickets.
No, I go in on the Wednesday to do. I used to work at it. Used to do MC, the gig for it, and with the Spirit of Edmonton people. And I get so blasted starting Wednesday night. I mean, it's a party. By the time Sunday rolled around, after
you're in your hotel room watching it on TV,
grilled cheese sandwich, Rusty, couple of milkshakes, hungover like shit. I said, you can take my tickets. Yeah, I would just give them away.
That's funny.
I'll tell you, talk about the scams, Rusty. The best one I've ever seen. I know several of them, and I know you do too. And I'm not lying. I get in a guy's car one day, Rusty.
Well, you're not allowed on the show if you lie.
You can't lie. You can't lie. I get in the guy's car one day, Rusty, and he hits the windshield washer button, to wash your windshield, right?
Uh-huh,
click, the wipers go.
Yeah.
And he has a cup with him, This guy used to have travelers all the time, whether he was driving or not, He was a big rum and coke drinker, So he's driving along, Russ, hits the windshield washer thing, holds his cup up. Yes, up to the vent, And I look, and there's a little tube sticking out, and it fills up his cup with rum and coke.
Oh, my God.
He emptied out his reservoir with the windshield washing fluid, cleaned it all out, and he put rum and coke in there and then ran the hose through the wall.
Oh, my God.
Not bad, Rusty, though. Not bad.
Not a bad trick.
Yeah. Ingenuity. Anyway, the other good one, Russ, to get into a bar. And I love that scam, but to get a ride home, just order a pizza somewhere, get it delivered, and then jump in the delivery car with the guy. St. Patrick's Day, to try and get in a bar in St. Patrick's Day, you got to line up for hours. Everyone's getting annihilated. It starts at 10 in the morning.
I played in Montreal. They have a good St. Patty's Day.
Yeah. And it's all live music, every bar, right? They hire musicians, of course, and you can hear the Celtic sounds blasting through your city. So my buddy, I said, we can't get in anywhere, man. We can't. The lineups are around the block. He said, no, I got an idea. He says, come pick me up. I pick him up. He gets into my car with two guitars. And I'm going, what the fuck?
For the band?
Yeah. Yeah. I said, this is the best.
That's so good.
And you pretend you're late so they can't really, the doormen are there. And you just run to the front of the line and go, Jesus, we're on right now. We're on. We're late. Yeah, get in there, boys. Get in there. So,
do you remember a hockey player named Mark Morrison?
Of course. Sure.
He, great junior player, got drafted by New York Rangers.
Yep.
And he's from Tawasin. So in the 80s, early 80s. There was no bars open in BC, maybe Canada, on Sundays.
Yeah, sure.
So they would go across. So he lived in Tawasin. He'd go across to Point Roberts.
Yep.
And which is in the U.S., which is really weird because it's in Canada. And he crossed the border, and they had no money. There was no ATMs. They'd spent all their money in the bar Saturday night. So they would go to this bar, stand outside. I think Garth Butcher might have been the other guy. And they would stand outside the door of the bar and check ID and charge $2 to get in until they'd have $20. And then they would be sitting beside a guy at the bar and they're like, aren't you checking the door? No, we're off now.
That's awesome. I love that scam. God, you got me going now.
I got to tell one more Mark Morrison story. So he gets called up. I'm not playing on the Cougars yet. So I would be 16 because I made the Cougars when I was 17 in Victoria in the WHL. And
right.
Mouse is his nickname. He was our captain and he was telling stories one night. The year before I made the team, he got called up for 8 or 9 games and he stayed with Ron Duguay.
And Ronnie's from my hometown, from Sudbury. Yeah.
And I think Barry Beck. And the first night he slept over, out comes like Cheryl Teagues and Cher in the morning out of the bedrooms. And he's like, they're like, good morning. Hi, how are you? I'm Cher. I'm Cheryl Teagues. He's like, I know who you are. Yeah, he has a million stories about the month he was called up or the 3 weeks he was called up and he lived in New York. It's quite something.
My buddy Daryl, he went to Denver University on a full ride hockey scholarship back in the days.
What's his name? Sorry,
Daryl Morrow.
Morrow.
Yeah. Not the Morrow you're thinking of. There's been a couple of Morrows who played in the league, but his nephew, Joe Morrow, played. I think he's done now, but
I was thinking of the one that played for the US 80 Olympic team.
Yeah, no. No relation. Anyway, these guys had every move in the book, Russ. Okay, this hockey team. They did two really good scams. Illegal. Okay, kind of criminal and unfortunate for the victim. But you got to give them marks for ingenuity. So speaking of pizza delivery, they lived in a house. A bunch of players. There were 6 or 7 of them that lived in a house, and their house was in between the favorite pizza restaurant and the residence at the college. Okay. Mm-hmm. So their house was in between. They were about a mile from the restaurant. You got to go by their place to get to the residence. Okay. About another mile away. They would phone up the pizza joint, Russ, claiming to be the fourth floor of, you know, whatever house that the residence. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they would order pizzas saying we need it for our residence here at the college. And they would order a dozen pizzas. Okay. Yeah. So we got a big party. And then they would phone and give them their house address and say, we need a small pizza delivered. So they knew that the guy would be coming by with the dozen pizzas on his way to the university, but stopping at their place first to drop off the $8 pizza. And while the guy was at the door dropping that off, two dudes went into his car
and stole 12.
Stole all the 12.
Jeez.
You can't do that, Russ. You can't. And their other one. Their other one, Rusty, team bus would pull up to a hotel. And when you ordered room service, okay, down in the dining, in the old day, all you do is just, you go in the restaurant, or excuse me, not room service, you go in the restaurant, I'm going to sign it to my room. No one really checked, you know, they trusted you and you sign your name, of course, and you would write your room number down and off you went, you know, and some people started lying, right? They would just go in and say, I'm in this room. And then they said, okay, well, we can't do this. We got to make sure the guy's got the proper room, right? Mm-hmm. And so they came up with this idea to say, we're going to go in as a team, sit in a restaurant, we're going to order food, and we are going to sign it to our room, which is, of course, not their room. Mm-hmm. So here's how they did it, because you need the name of the person and you need the room number. So they blast into the hotel, Russ. They immediately go to the house phone, and understanding in a large hotel that there's always going to be either a Johnson or a Smith, okay, who's staying there. They get on the phone, and they'll go, could you please connect me with Mr. Smith? And almost invariably, the operator will say, okay, no problem. Or there's two Smiths here. Is it Kevin or Robert? Yeah, Kevin Smith. Okay, so now they've got the name of the guy, but they don't know the room number yet. They ring the room. You know, and the guy answers the phone, Kevin Smith, goes, hello. And they go, yeah, this is room service. We've got your clubhouse and fries. Sorry, there's a little delay, but we'll have it right up to you. And Kevin Smith goes, I never ordered room service. And they say, oh, I'm sorry. What room are you in? The guy goes, 314. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, got the wrong room. Jesus, Russ. Now they got Kevin Smith, room 314. Jeez. And in they go to the restaurant. Terrible, Rusty. You can't do that. But you got to admire it, Russ.
Well, when I played for the Leafs, yeah. And we would always, we're flu commercial, and it seemed like, you know, we're flying back somewhere on Sunday or what, didn't matter what day, but we check out of the, if we're out west, we check out of the hotel, have lunch, and then we go to the airport, depending on the flight. So right. We'd find out what room Don Edwards was in, our backup goalie.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And we would go, five of us have lunch or breakfast, oh, and then we'd sign it to his room, and he'd already checked out. Oh, so he didn't see the bill, and then first paycheck would come along and he'd be docked, you know, for not paying his bill on the road.
The backup goalie of all guys, Russ. Yeah, pick someone with cash.
I got one in the World Junior Championships. Hang on to your thought. Okay. So World Junior Championships were in Sweden the year I went, 83, 84. And we all wanted to, you know, everybody wanted to call home and talk to their families and girlfriends over Christmas, New Year's. So it's a fortune. You're calling from your hotel room phone.
Right.
And somebody went down to the lobby desk, front desk.
Right.
And noticed the lady or the guy looking at this big numbers machine in every room. It had a room number and this little, like, almost like a clock on it. So when you picked up your phone, it would keep track of how many minutes you were on your phone, and then they would multiply it by X, and that they would charge you that. And when they turned their backs, we would just put it back to zero. So the Canadian junior team, that spread like wildfire. So you'd always see two or three guys hovering around going, hey, can you get me a something from the back room? Can you
get me
a pen? Or soon as they turn their back, all the numbers would go to zero.
Fantastic. I should be laughing, but I love it. The one I saw in person, okay, so real, is I was and don't kill us, okay? Don't you kill us, all us repeat story people who are on us, okay? Like killing us if I have. I land back in Ottawa. I've been on a trip for 4 or 5 days. I had my car in the long-term parking, right? And take the shuttle over there, get the guy to drop me off the car. But so my car is right by the entrance and exit of the place. So I've got my ticket. I'm going to have to pay whatever it is, $30 or $40 a day. And so I'm into $200. And I see a guy go to the ticket plate, you know, where you pull your ticket out. He's walking, though. Okay. He's got a suitcase in his hand, and he's getting off the airplane. He was on the same shuttle ticket. I was, and he just walks to the thing and punches a ticket and then walks to his car. And I'm going, what the what happens here?
Yeah.
So I said, well, how are you going to get away with that? I just get in my car. As I drive through, I show the guy the ticket saying, I forgot something at home. I was just here like, you know, 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the guy, he says, not only do I not have to pay the minimum, the guy waves me right through. Jeez.
It's and you guys, it's you two assholes why they take our license plates down when we pull in.
Yeah, right. Anyway, what's your scam? Let us know. Go to the website, suspendables.com, and you can let us know the best scam. And I've heard lots. My favorite is, Rusty, taking your cheap tickets that you buy for a Stanley Cup final. Go down to the center. Okay, so you've bought the cheap seats, standing room only, but you want the best seats. Into the arena you go. You've bought the scalper tickets for maybe $300 each, okay, for Game 7 Stanley Cup. Into the arena you go.
Fucking 1979.
Yeah. You walk right down to center ice, okay, down the aisle, right at center ice. Turn around, look up in the lower bowl, look around, and you'll always see two young kids. We'll be sitting together for they're on corporate tickets, or their father has big corporate seats, and they're 12, 13 years old or something, and they've got the best seats in the house for Game 7. You go to those kids, Rusty, and you give them a couple $100 cash each and say, you're going to give me your seats. Here's $400. And we'll give you our tickets. And yeah. Without fail, Rusty. The kids really? Snap up the two brown ones and off they go. Yeah.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Rusty, maybe we'll talk some hockey. John Tortorella, who's back as an analyst. The name of the player, Stevie, who did the Michigan play?
Trevor Zegras.
Okay, Trevor Zegras. This guy, this time though, Rusty, he doesn't do that. He gets the puck onto his blade and softly throws it up over the goalie's head, okay, in a beautiful little slow arc, and dude in front of the net bats it out of the air into the net. Okay, that's yeah. what they did.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable play. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic play. And John Tortorella goes off saying, there's no room for that in our game. It's a bunch of horse shit. This hot dogging's got to go. I'm paraphrasing, but you can get the picture from Tortorella. And he's ruining the game. It's not going to attract people, blah, 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 blah. So I think it's fantastic. I like it. So people want to know what your reaction is to that sort of play in the game.
I think he's probably right. I don't know if that play really should be in the game. It's a tough one. It's a really beautiful thing and fun to watch and stuff. Right. But I don't know if it's fair for the goalie if you can cup that puck and from behind the net, you know, look, it's almost like a lacrosse play.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't usually agree with Torts, but I kind of agree with him. It's a bit of a, it's, I just don't think it's really, I don't know if a goalie can really defend that. It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Yeah. I don't know if they're talking about it making
I think it's great skill. Don't get me wrong. I think Gary Lehman was the first player I ever saw do that back in the mid 80s and juggle the puck and do all that kind of fancy stuff. And then that kid in Michigan did it. And then guys were trying to practice. And then now it's happening more often. Since then, it's not happening all the time, but it's happening.
Yeah, I think the question is not, Russ, whether it should be allowed or not. The question is, it's an incredible play.
It's totally entertaining. Play,
But whether a player on behalf of the team, if they did that and you're the coach, again, Tortorella said no, doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. What would you be like if you see that on your team and you're coaching that team? And this kid skates back to the bench with a big ass grin. Tortorella is going to pull him aside and go, you know what? You're not playing for the rest of the period. He's pissed, right? How about it was you?
Well, I got benched for going when I played for John Brophy, who wasn't a big fan of mine, but I went down on a goalie and I put it between my legs and tried to go far side top shelf. And he benched me for it because he called it showboating. So it happened to me when I was a player. You know, when the thing that I love Teemu Selänne, and I think he was a great player, but to this day, it pisses me off that when he scored, he took his glove off, threw it in the air and shot it out of the sky. Like he was shooting birds.
Right.
And to this day, it bothers me that we didn't do anything. Like we didn't go and try to, you know, fight or do something to him. And showboating, I love celebrating, but to showboat where you're kind, you know, doing it in front of, like making the other team, you know, like rubbing it in their face. Like, Brendan Lemieux right now is getting in shit from other teams because of what somebody said he scored a goal and he acts like Sidney Crosby in front of our bench. And
oh no.
Yeah. There's a respect factor and a line that you walk. And when you cross the line, usually you pay the price. And right now, you know, there not a lot of guys are paying the price. And the fact that Teemu did that when I was on the ice or when we were playing him, I can't remember if I was in Minnesota or Dallas, it still doesn't sit well with me that we didn't do anything.
He did it in visiting rinks? He certainly did it at home.
Well, he did it. We were in Winnipeg. I'll tell you, I'll never forget. I mean, we were in Winnipeg and he scored a beautiful goal on a breakaway. And then he went through the freaking glove in the air and shot you know, used a stick like a shotgun and was shooting the birds out of the air.
Right, right.
And I just never seen a player do that. And so showboating, I'm with Torts. I mean, showboat, there's no place in the game for showboating. And if you want to showboat, you're going to get your fucking ass kicked.
Right. So you would have.
It's a skill and it's something you do in practice and for fun. But I don't know if it should be allowed as a play on.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's.
Back in your day, though, what you're saying is if go ahead and do it, but you're going to get your face filled at some point in the game.
Yeah. Right? Like, you know, Tiger Williams, when he scored in Toronto back in the 70s, when he played for he got traded from Toronto to Vancouver. He came back to Toronto, scored a hat trick. And he went down center ice riding his stick and with, you know, like a lasso or whatever and celebrating. But Tiger Williams is freaking tough and he was one of the toughest players in the league. So if somebody wanted on the other team wanted to fight him, he would have been okay. Let's go. But
sure.
For the average guy, if you're going to do shit, you got to back it up. If you're going to spear somebody in the nuts,
right.
You got to back it up. And at least that's the way it was when I played. And so that's why I never got elbow penalties, cross-checking penalties, spearing penalties. But that's tripping, the way the game used to be. You like had that. To back it up. And I don't know if you have to back it up anymore.
Yeah, speaking of sell, Theo Fleury used to, like, he scored a goal and then he would skate as fast as he could towards center and then drop to his knees and slide.
Wasn't that an overtime goal, though?
Maybe it was only a one-time big overtime goal.
Yeah.
Colorado or Calgary, one of the
That's
two.
What I mean. I like when I scored, I love celebrating. And if you get an overtime goal, kind of all bets are off. Like remember Brad May.
Sure.
Mayday scored that goal and he threw his stuff. And that's just exuberance. That's not showing off. He did something that he only did once, probably.
Right.
And it was a huge freaking goal. But just a regular season game where you score, you know, a goal and you're
right.
You know, if you score the second goal and you're losing 4-2, you're not going to be riding your stick down center ice because your own teammates are going to fucking kick your ass.
What are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
It brings me to another question. Because one of the things that came out of that was comments from people saying, because the thing went viral. The guy does the Michigan play. It goes viral. And people are weighing in, go, this is fantastic for the game. That that the thing gets, you know, a billion views or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it exposes the game to people who otherwise not be interested in looking at it going, wow, that's crazy. I'd like to watch that hockey game. I don't know that it would have that big of an effect. And then someone had asked me to ask you, speaking of growing the game, the NHL and hockey, do you think there should be things done, Russ, to grow the game? Or if you're looking ahead, you're the commissioner. What do you think about the sort of the game itself and how would you grow it going ahead?
I think you always want to grow your game. You always want to grow your business. And the more people who are exposed to our game, the NHL or hockey in general, it's just great. I watched San Jose grow from an NHL player to a dad coaching a California Peewee team and Bantam team going up there on a road trip from LA and watching this community of such a diverse ethnic game that it was amazing because it's a melting pot up there. Right. And so it was incredible to see all these different nationalities playing the game of hockey and all the rinks up there are shark rinks. And so they've done a great job and brought the community not only to their game to watch, but also to the game to play and experience. So I think it's anytime you can grow the game and get more people playing it is fantastic. Look at all the girls that are playing hockey now and getting scholarships and going to the Olympics. And they're really trying to make a go of a pro league. I think it's great. So, the more people that get to watch the game, I've given, some friends down here, tickets to the Kings game And they absolutely love it live. Mm-hmm. They don't quite understand it watching it on TV, but once they go see it live, it's a great introduction to the game.
Rusty, you know hockey, obviously, and the craziness of here in Canada and certainly other areas of the state. Playing in LA, Russ, can you give us an idea? I live in a hockey crazed city. I know Toronto, I know Montreal. You played there, and then you played in LA, and people live and breathe here with the Oilers. No one ever wanted to go to Edmonton. My first job was out here. That's how I ended up out in Edmonton when I was 23. And I remember my mother saying to me, "Oh my God, you're going to die out there. It's like Siberia. It's like mm-hmm. freezing cold. There's nothing going on. Why would you go out there?" But of course, the Oilers put them on the map. There's no mm-hmm. doubt about it. What was it like in LA, Russ? Is it anything like Canadian cities here with rivalries and freaking out and everything?
Oh, well, the rivalries are real with Anaheim and San Jose. And what's cool is those fans can go to all the away games, so they just get in their car and it's fantastic. It's different outside the rink. You don't get recognized as much as a Canadian city, but they love their professional athletes. Americans do. Mm-hmm. They have such high regard for people who make it in their sport to that professional level. So even if they don't know hockey or football or soccer or baseball, basketball, they still have that respect for people who make it. Because college is so big in the U.S., college sports, and they see these superstars that never make it pro. So when somebody makes it pro, they put that person on a pedestal. So it's different than Canada, because Canada, in my opinion, as speaking as a hockey player, mm-hmm. In the Canadian cities, it's a religion in some cities. They're passionate in some cities, but they all love their hockey players. The dads played, the brothers played, the sisters, like, it's just this thing about Canadians, especially from when I grew up, that we all watched Hockey Night in Canada growing up. There's lots of distractions now. There's lots of different things that you can watch on TV that not everybody in Canada is a hockey fan, but from my era, it was a big deal. I mean, Saturday nights, what were people doing? They were listening to their radio, and then when TV came along, they were watching Hockey Night in Canada on TV, and it's part of our culture. And so when you travel as a player through Canada, it's amazing that even the opposing teams, the fans recognize you. And U.S. it's different.
Right.
It's different.
Tough on a player, I guess, Russ, to play in a market that isn't probably, if you're Canadian and you end up playing in the States somewhere.
It depends on the person, because not every personality wants to be on the hot seat all the time. There's some people that don't thrive under the pressure.
Right.
Some people do. And so it just depends on the person, the individual. And then there's a negative to it too, where some people thrive. They live for that. They want to be recognized all the time, and it's a drug for them. And that's a hard thing to come back from, because once you're retired and you've thrived on that, I've seen it where guys just love the limelight, they love being recognized. And then once they're done, it's a tough transition, and you've got to watch it. It's a slippery slope.
Given the choice for us, say you had two not very good hockey teams. Okay. forget weather being a factor here. Okay. If you look at Phoenix, right, they're not going very good. And let's say it was the Rangers. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're shit. So the Rangers are shit. Phoenix is shit. But New York is New York. Where would you rather play, Russ? In a Phoenix, you just slip right under the radar around there for mm-hmm. hockey. I mean, it's getting bigger all the time. Yeah. But my point is, a really quiet market or a hockey craze market, you know?
So and the, big city. The simple, the quick answer is that I want to play in the hottest, best, most pressure market. And if I was a GM of a team, I only want players that want to be under the gun.
Right.
And not because they want to be recognized. I want the player that thrives under pressure and wants to have to answer for his play every day. And the player that wants to play in a market where they don't care as much as those markets, they can have them. Because right. I want the player who wants to be under the microscope and answer questions and be ready to play every night. And that was the beauty of playing in some of the cities that I got to play in. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, when you're on the road and you played in Chicago and that anthem started, man, you couldn't hear the guy, your teammate standing beside you. They were so loud and the game, like you were on right then. It was like, if you were half asleep, you were awake and ready for a fight, a game, meaning a battle. I shouldn't say a fight, a battle. Mm-hmm. And playing in Chicago, in Boston, you better be ready. And then playing in Toronto, Montreal, I got to play in New York, Vancouver. I mean, there was a buzz, especially Montreal. I lived downtown and the buzz on the day of a game is just phenomenal. I mean, it's like being an actor and being on Broadway. I mean, it's great.
Right.
I loved it.
If you're a Connor McDavid type coming into the league, you're a high draft pick. You're going to maybe hands down, you're going to go number one overall. Russ.
By a mile.
by a mile, you're going to be number one.
His shadow would have went second pick overall.
I hope this isn't a dumb question, because if it is, you'll tell me. So let's say you're Connor. You can go to a really good team, Stanley Cup contender, with a bunch of really good players. They're going to, you know, you can go to the Leafs or whatever. Or might a guy say, I want to go to a team where I'm going to be the number one guy for sure, and that I can take these guys into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. A team that's sort of, not say going nowhere, but shitty, a shitty team. Might there be the odd guy, Russ, who comes in and goes, okay, I want to go there because I want to build this franchise. I'd love to take it on my shoulders.
Well, I think you're 18 years old. Your thoughts should be, I'm going to go there, I'm going to play hard, and then that evolves. You know, it just, you're 18 years old.
Right.
I mean, you're freaking, I mean, you just hit puberty in the last few years. I mean, you're not right. rebuilding franchises. I mean, you shouldn't even have that thought. But I think for a young person, they just, you want to make it. You've dreamt right. about playing in the NHL. And then once you're there, things evolved. I mean, it took me till I was 25. I felt so young at 25, but you know, all the experiences I had from 18 to 25, and I got traded at 23, and it was like starting over, and Pat Burns made me feel like I was a rookie, even though I'd been in the league 5 years. And
he was,
and I
prick,
just
though,
kept
right?
learning and learning and learning. And then at some point, there's a point in time where you feel like you're part of the leadership group of the, like, or you should be a leader. You know, I don't think an 18-year-old should be dictating like, oh, I want to go here, I want to go there. I think you go where you get picked, and then things happen around you and things happen to you, and then you go look at Mario Lemieux. Freaking Pittsburgh sucked when he got drafted right. there. You know, and over time they added pieces and he got better and he got more mature, and we heard about Doug Bodger talking about him last show, and it takes time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. There's Wayne Gretzky is different because he started earlier than most. You know, he was, how old was he when he started, when he 11. Got into the NHL, but in, no, but in the NHL, like when
17 or something, I think in the world,
I don't think he was 17 in the NHL. I don't, you know, I don't think Wayne walked into Edmonton and was like, remember, I think Wayne, didn't he tell us a story about wearing the number? And, didn't he tell that story on our 99th show? I think he talked about the wearing the number and Slat said, okay, you, after his first game, he got like 2-2 and he goes, okay, you can wear the number.
I don't know.
I don't know. You have to go back and listen to that show. But even Wayne Gretzky, you know, he had to prove himself. So I think when you're older, so to sort of back up and answer question, I think when you're older and you want to, and you maybe haven't won and you've been in the league 10 or 12 years and you're like, oh my God, now I'm trying to go to a team that has a chance. But at 18, you thank your lucky stars and you congratulate yourself on all the hard work. And now the work's just beginning.
Ray Bourque, I was never a big fan of that, but you're the barometer here. You're the source. Ray Bourque never won in Boston, right? And then he went, obviously his choice. He made his own and he went to Colorado.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that, but he did it.
And won a cup, by the way.
To me, what was worse was that he brought the cup to Boston and had his wheeled around.
Really?
And that wasn't really frowned upon. Like, I think he might have taken it to City Hall or something. Like, he did some stuff. Like, you know,
attaboy, right?
Okay, you all get a day. Everybody gets a day with the cup,
right?
But don't go around the city in Boston, the place you played 20 years and you didn't win.
And
go
to
your favorite. Like, have your buddies over to your house and backyard and do all that. But don't go wheeling around the city with the cup. And I'd heard that. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to get Ray on the show and see if he did do that. But
that's funny. Anyways, if he did. That's
balls. I don't know if it's funny. But
are you taking the really good player, Russ, the young player? You talked about it, 18 years old. The Connor McDavids of the world and the Gretzky's and Sid Crosby's and those guys. You're running that team that he's coming to, Russ. Are you saying whip the captaincy on him right away?
No, not a chance.
Really? Okay.
You know what I don't like is when teams draft a really good player that you know eventually he's going to be your captain.
Right.
So they don't name a captain for like 2 years. Because on every team, there's a leader. Whether you're the worst team in the league or not, there's a leader there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Name the guy captain, and then when Sid's ready or whoever is ready, then you give it to him. But these teams that have 3 and 4 assistants, we don't know who's our leader yet. Like, fuck off.
Right.
Just give somebody the C, and then in 2 years say, you know what, you're probably going to wear this for 2 years. That guy would be proud to have it. As long as he knew going in that, you know, when this player is old enough, we're probably going to give it to him. So don't be pissed off.
Right.
And if you're going to be pissed off, we'll give it to somebody else. But I think you need a captain on teams. I'm just not a fan when teams don't have one player wearing the C.
Right. How big a deal is it, Russ, being
a captain? It's a big deal.
It is.
Being an assistant or a captain. Montreal, the players vote on who, and I don't know what it's like, but when Bob Gainey retired, we voted on a captain, and they kept, I can't remember the rules, but it was a tie between Guy Carboneau and Chris Chelios.
Right.
And they go, okay, everybody repick. And because they were picking, like, Brian Skrudland had 4 votes, Mike McPhee had 2 votes, and then, Chelly and Carbo had. So then they were like, okay, you can only pick. They did it twice. And then I think the third time they were like, okay, you can only pick between Chelly and Carbo. And it was 50-50.
Right.
What they did, which was politically, so totally politically correct, they gave them both the captaincy. And then Carbo, the first 20 games, one, I think, was captain on the road and one was captain at home. And then the second half of the season, they switched. So they were, you know, both captains. And that was funny, though. We kept having this vote and they're giving guys shit. Like, you know, we were saying that Brian Scrudland, who's a funny guy, we should have Screwy on the show. He is freaking hilarious. And they were saying Screwy was kept voting for himself. Oh, God. I'll tell you what, he and Mike McPhee, if you're a Montreal Canadian fan, those two were so great together. Spud was his nickname. Mike McPhee is Spud. Scrudland was Screwy. And they were like Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon from the Tonight Show. And Screwy didn't shut up. And Mike just laughed at everything that Screwy said. And oh, my God, we had so much fun hanging out on the road. It was just a blast. They're great, great guys, great competitors. I played with them a little bit, played a lot with Mike McPhee, but Screwy and I, we roomed together once on a 10-day road trip. And I think that was the last time they put us together. Like a mini bar, just took a shit kick in every Beautiful. City we went into.
Beautiful. You brought up Tiger Williams. You know, everyone kind of knows him on the surface as fans as this sort of lunatic, crazy guy. Was he as crazy and nutty, Russ, as we thought he was?
Yeah. He's tough and he's got a huge heart. Like, he always asked me about my mom. Like, how's your mom doing? How's your mom? Because I think my mom made him cookies once or something. I don't know. And he just loved my mom. But an hour later, he could be, you know, punching you in the head for saying something stupid.
But, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he was...
Bit of a time bomb.
He was, he was kind of like Brett Hullish, where he would say a lot of things that guys were thinking, but he'd take it too far.
Right.
Like, I heard this story. I don't know. Have I told the story about the parking lot in Calgary?
Nope.
So, Calgary parking lot, there's a guy in a booth. He parks his truck in Calgary at this parking lot, and there's a guy in the booth, and you pay X amount every half hour, and then after 5 o'clock, you pay for the entire day or something. And he got there right around that time, and he was arguing with the guy, I don't owe you for a full day. He goes, yeah, you owe me for a full day parking. And he goes, fuck you, I'm not paying you for a full day. He grabs his keys, he goes into his truck, pulls in front of the guy's door so the guy can't get out, and he puts a rope around the guy's little hut, ties it to his truck, and pulls the guy into the fucking street.
Oh, no. Come on.
There's stories like we're on a... I played in a Legends tour with him after I retired. The first year I retired, he invited me to Alaska, and I've told the story where we freaking went to Inuvik and Yellowknife, and then we went to Alaska, and I said, I thought we were just going to Alaska, and he goes, oh, if I told you we were going to the Yellowknife and Inuvik, you wouldn't have come. Anyways, we get to Alaska, we go to this bar, and there's a Canadian band playing at this bar, and we start, it was one of these karaoke things where you go up to them,
right,
give them a song, and they sing it. Like, they're the band. You don't sing, they sing, and they're freaking phenomenal. Right. This guy could do anybody. So he comes over to our table on a break, and he introduces himself, and he goes, I'm a fan of all you guys. I live in Vancouver, and I'm up here for 3.5 months a year, and I make my salary enough to live off for me and my family for the whole year. So it's a great gig. And anyway, so he goes, I used to play. So one of the guys goes, well, we're playing the RCMP in Alaska or whatever city we were in. And he said, and he goes, do you want to play with us? And he goes, are you freaking kidding me? So he's a rock and roller.
Right.
He's got long hair and earrings. Right. We tell Tiger that this band, the leader of this band, is going to play with us that night. So this kid walks in, he's not a kid. We're like, you know, 30, 35, 40. I don't know what he was.
Right.
He walks into the locker room and Tiger goes, if you don't take those fucking earrings out right now, he goes, I'm going to rip them out. Like right in front of everyone. The kid doesn't, he's like met us the night before at the bar. And now Tiger's threatening to rip the earrings out of his ears and nostrils.
So funny, man.
So Tiger, big heart, but tough son of a bitch.
Yeah. Brad Jansen's a buddy of mine. He gave me a story. He was a hockey equipment supplier, hockey stick.
Brad.
You know Janner.
Yeah, I used to get all my skates from him.
Yeah, sure.
He went from skates to sticks and whatever. Yeah.
Anyway, funny guy. He's a funny guy. And
Janny.
And played junior, I think. He probably was a junior. I don't think he played pro.
He played a little bit, yeah. A
little bit of junior. And he's got the quick wit. He's like you, Russ. You know, he loves to chop guys down and all that shit. So people love to get one up on him, you know, if they can. Yeah. And what they did was one of those tours, just like you were talking about, Russ.
Yeah.
It was jam packed. You might have even been on it.
I was on it. It was the 99 All-Stars trip to Europe Gretzky put together.
But there was one, he may have gone on that, but there was one really kind of a semi serious one. And they duped him into thinking that they wanted him on the team. And they phoned him and said something like, so-and-so pulled out, Janner, we need you to come on this team. And he was, and they had no intention of bringing him on the team. So poor Janner got aced on it. Rusty, tell me the story about the press guy that you guys hated. Yeah, I want to hear that story.
Well, Gary Lehman remembers his name, but he did not, we were easy to not like in the 80s, Toronto Maple Leafs. We were bad. And it was when Harold Ballard wouldn't let the press on the the chartered flight, so they had to fly commercial. Okay. When it was back when they made a stand to let ladies get in the locker room or something.
Right.
Harold didn't want women in the locker room interviewing players. So there was this big stance. And so Harold had a fight with the media and said, okay, you can't fly on my chartered flights anymore. And so they had to take Toronto to St. Louis. It took forever to get there. So when we check in, so we charter, the bus picks us up. We go right to the hotel. The hotel lines up all our keys in these little envelopes all across the front desk. And Gord Stellick was their assistant GM, and he would read off the names like Therrien, you know, Nyland, Salming, Vive, and you just grab your envelope and the last 8 or 10, he goes, oh, these are all the media. So he pushes them over to the side. So Motor City Smitty and I, Brad Smith, go down and we look up the guys. We grabbed his envelope.
Uh-oh.
And put it in our pocket, threw our bags in our room, went to his room. And then started ordering shrimp cocktails and drinks and all kinds of food, cheeseburgers. And we just piled through this food and left it in his room. And then we went to our rooms and we signed his name, big tip.
Right.
And so so when he checked out, well, he probably actually, we weren't that bright because we left all the food in the room. So he probably just thought it was the person before him.
Right.
But anyways, that's what we thought we were being really funny at 18 and 19, or I was 18 and Smitty was probably 28.
Absolutely. But, don't be a dink. If the guy's a dink, you got to get him.
Yeah. Thought we were being real funny.
Rusty, are you letting your guys go to the Olympics on your hockey team? There's a bunch of shit coming down again. COVID just is not going to go away. We're nowhere near it being ended. I'm not asking you about your opinion on COVID or vaccines or anything, but it is what it is. There's still problems with it. There's another variant that they're talking about. Olympics are 8 weeks away. Commissioner Bettman, the other day, Gary Bettman came out and said, we're going to leave it completely up to the players. They haven't mandated anything, the league.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be their choice. Would you go, Russ, as a player?
Yeah, I think I would. I think that my son's team just had COVID. And they're all, you know, most of the players, I'm sure almost all the players are vaccinated. So my son's team fully vaccinated. Seven players got sick. My son was one of them, missed four games. And the interesting part and statistic is that all the players who didn't get COVID had previously had COVID. So I think if a player's had it, I think he should have confidence going over there, you know, that he's going to be healthy and fine. Right. And they are healthy people. They're athletes. But I think it's COVID that will stop teams going, not the injury thing. You know, I know you've brought it up before where the owners are worried about, you know, their player, their asset, as they call them.
Sure.
But I think the, you know, they're, you look at the stadiums, I mean, they're full of people,
right?
You turn on the TV in the United States, there's people freaking going to these games, the players are playing. I mean, if you're not, I mean, I just don't, I think they can do it. I think I think so. Maybe players won't want to do it if they haven't had COVID. Maybe they don't want to go. I mean, they're going to be in the Olympics. When I went, I mean, we get our own dorms. We eat in a varsity hall. I'm sure it's different now that with COVID, they've probably got room, like teams will eat right where they want to eat. I don't know about that. But when I played, it was more like our own bubble, but it was freaking everybody in the world was there. It was a big bubble.
Right.
Big bubble, lots of condoms.
Let's get an update here. NHL's postponed the Calgary Flames' next three games. Six players and a staff member entered the COVID-19 protocol. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, the IOC, which is the Olympic Committee, provided new information stating that in accordance with Chinese law, an athlete at the games that tests positive for COVID-19 will need to produce two negative tests 24 hours apart. If they're able to do so, the quarantine period could last from 21 days to 5 weeks. Yikes.
Yikes. Well, fuck, then you're going to be stuck in China?
Yeah.
So if you get sick over there, you're stuck.
Until you get two negative tests, I guess.
No, that's... Well, because my daughter went to her and her fiance went to Spain.
Yep.
For a wedding. 11 of them.
Yep.
Went together, and they all got COVID, and the people who were tested positive before they got on their flights, they had to stay for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In a hotel on their dime, you know.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Right.
But can you imagine?
Yeah. It's good. Well, some shit's going to come down.
You got COVID. We're leaving you.
Good luck.
I don't know, man. That's crazy. All you got to do is turn the freaking TV on the weekends and watch all these fans sitting beside each other, high-fiving each other.
Right. And, I know.
And, you know, what the hell are we scared about? I don't get it.
Yeah. Or it's just not what it should be that they should tighten up. But shout outs, Rusty. I'm going to dedicate the show to my old friend. Speaking of scams, he was fantastic. Storm and Norman, Norm Jackson, who texted us, Russ, because he's in Cowichan where Doug Bodger is, and they're buddies. And,
no way.
Normie is a lifelong friend of mine, my whole adult life from Edmonton days. And, He's a big listener of the show. He's got his buddies listening. He's a golf pro.
Wow.
I want to say the Cowichan Golf Course. Sorry, Normie. Yeah. I don't know the proper name, but he's been out there for years and loves it. And him and I go way back. Aaron Fuji, I think it's Grice, also listens to the show. Blair Caldwell and Jetski Gillies, to name a few, are some of the guys. Imagine this crew. They got those nicknames. Nice. Anyway. Where Normie helped me tremendously, Russ, when I moved here, I was 23, golf fanatic, mm-hmm. and I made the brilliant, most dumbest mistake of my life. I was going to join a golf course, and I joined the Edmonton Country Club, not realizing, Russ, I was working for Molson at the time in a brilliant move, and there were a lot of choices, of course, to join, but I joined that one, and it was the same course my boss was a member at.
Oh, God.
So fucking stupid. Yeah. And so I joined there, and he played a little bit of golf, but I was constantly playing hooky from work, from playing golf. But Norman was the pro at the pro shop, and we had a good little thing going. When I went to make tee times, he would say, well, let's just see where Donnie Gray is playing.
Yeah.
And so,
or let's give you an alias.
but to make sure you weren't seen, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not only would Normie say, okay, well, Don's playing at 10. That means you can't, you know, if you're going to play at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, which you can't, that's fine. He's gone.
Yeah.
But if you're going to play at the same time, he would pick the time saying, okay, I think if he's at 10, if you go at, we need you to go at exactly the 11:50 time, because now you're missing him on these holes that cross by each other and shit. He had it all figured out for me when to play.
Great. So,
and he was the one who told me that on the 18th hole, there is a par 3. The green is right beside the pro shop, and the driveway is in between the 18th green, and you drive along this thing. And he came running out to the, green when I was there, saying, "Don, your boss is coming here. He said he'd be here in about 2 minutes." And I dove into the bunker, Russ, and laid down in the bottom of the bunker as he drove by, so he didn't see me. And then fucked off. Anyway, Storm and Norman, thanks to all the boys out at Cowichan for listening to the show, and for everybody else. Another one in the books, Russ. Are you a Christmas shopper, Rusty?
No, I'm not a shopper.
Well, what do you do for Christmas? Who buys all the shit? Guess. Yeah,
my
guess
kids.
Who does everything for you?
My kids.
Paris, doesn't she? Must, you know.
Oh, no, Paris buys everything for everybody, but I get the girls. Brooklyn and Allie.
What do you get in your kids? My kids are in their 20s. They got everything.
I know. Same with, but Paris is awesome. She knows exactly what they like and what they need, and Lawton's really into golf now. So
find out what my kids like. Ask Paris what my kids will like. I need to know.
No, she's it's so funny because she'll, I don't know if anybody else does this out here listening, but she'll start early and then hiding the gifts. And then 2 years later, she'll be in a drawer going, oh, fuck.
Beautiful.
There's a funny thing on Instagram right now, this song about it's your wife and my wife, you know, it's a song. And she, even though every day she can't find her keys, something like that. And I hear my wife's got this little tracker on her cell phone.
Oh, perfect.
You know.
Where the keys are.
Not the keys. Awesome. She leaves them in the car. She can't find her phone. So she's got this beeper, like tracking her freaking phone.
That's all a great idea until you lose that beeper too.
God. Oh, I know what I forgot to say. I'm playing golf tomorrow with Danny Heatley and Teddy Purcell.
Danny Heatley is still around?
Yeah, he lives down here, and he doesn't remember this, but he and I met at the Olympics in 2010 in Vancouver.
Right.
I was working for, I came in for Hockey Canada, and for 4 days during the Olympics, and I shook his hand, met the whole team, and I'm looking forward to spending the day with him. So next week, I'll tell everybody about our golf day tomorrow.
Stevie, our producer, Ottawa guy. By the way, Steve and I do a little daily podcast, Steve Warren Project, it's called, with me and
all
Steve
10
Warren.
People listen.
Yeah. Now,
how dare you?
Yeah. I'll say it for you. No, okay, I won't. I've done enough swearing. Heatley played in Ottawa, Stevie. What years? When was Danny Heatley was?
03.
He arrived about 05, and I think he was here for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Didn't he have back-to-back 50-goal seasons?
He did, and no other senator has had 50 goals besides him.
Yeah. Anyway, check out Danny. He was a fantastic player, and you can, I don't know, Wikipedia, not a great story. Well, one of the things in his life that he got over, but you can check that out. Well, good luck there tomorrow, Russ.
You're
Danny Heatley.
I'll let you know. And then Teddy Purcell from Newfoundland, who is just a great kid. He's been to those. He can't wait. All he can talk about is having Vespers after golf, martinis. And then James Wisniewski.
What are Vespers? Playing. I'm guessing. Yeah.
It's the original Bond martini. It's 3 ounces gin, 1 ounce vodka, and 1/2 ounce of lillet, like a French vermouth.
I picked a bad decade to give up drinking.
It's so good.
Sounds good.
I'll be having one at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, good. Thanks. Thank you.
In about 2.5 hours.
Suspendables.com for all the shows. Email us at
thesuspendables.com is the
Yahoo. Website. Yahoo.com. What is it? Thesuspendables. I got a mind block on that shit now. Thesuspendables@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again to all the boys out in Cowichan for listening to Storm and Norman and all those guys. And to you, everybody else who's listening, Merry Christmas. See you later, Rusty. Have a good week, man.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.